Hey, this is Gregory Titus, and you're listening to the Master of One podcast. You can find me at gregorytitus.com.
Welcome to another Sandbox episode of the Master of One podcast. This week, we talk to the incredibly talented illustrator, Alexander Yacarino. I'm Andrew, your Master of Art and Design.
I'm Patrick, your Master of Television and Film.
And I'm Luke, your Master of Toys and Games.
So put your digital pencil to digital paper, because it's time to get drawing.
And print it out in real.
For this Sandbox episode, we're excited to talk to the incredibly talented illustrator who has done work for the likes of Marvel, Sony, Under Armour, MGM, and so many more. But at the heart of it, he's just a simple dude with two pet tortoises. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Alexander Yacarino to the show.
Yeah. What's going on?
Hey, I want to know about these tortoises now.
Oh, man. So I have two baby leopard tortoises. One's name is Ghibli, and the other one's name is Chibi, and they are awesome.
Nice. So, like, chibi, like, as in the Japanese, like, small and cute?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and okay. He's actually, it turns out, too, he was the run of the litter. So, he's, like, he's a year old now, and he still fits in the palm of my hand. So, it's pretty appropriate. Oh. And then Ghibli's growing, like, crazy. And they'll probably get to be, like, the size of footballs. They'll be at my funeral. They'll live to be, like, 50 years old.
That's awesome.
Are you leaving all of your worldly goods to them?
Yeah, they'll make sure no one touches it. Actually, their terrarium is on top of my flat file. I bought one of those, those big, I don't know if you saw those Martha Stewart flat files when they went on sale, but I scored one of those, and then I built a terrarium on top of it, so they protect all the posters. They're the guardians of the prints.
I love it.
Everything about this just says, I want to visit your house.
It also just said, simple guy.
Yes,
I'm just a simple dude with two tortoises.
All right, so we've already kind of we've dug beneath the surface, but why don't you just bring us back to the surface for a second and give us the quick Wikipedia page about who you are, what you do, and how you do it.
Oh man, the Wikipedia page. Having drawn, you know, the old chestnut drew forever when I was a kid who drew. Sure. Drew under the moniker That Kid Who Draws since like 18, but I would do murals. I would do CD covers for my local aspiring hip hop artists in my hometown. I would do just about anything. And in the last, I'm 30 now. So now I'm that man who draws. So now I do a lot of, do more living than surviving off of my illustration, mostly poster art.
You really are just a simple dude who has two tortoises, but you also draw. And so I think where I'd like to start in this conversation is that little nugget you said quickly in your bio. You said who does less surviving and does more living off of his drawing. Why don't you talk to us about what that means and the process it took to get to that point?
Oh, man. I get asked a lot if I went to school for what I do. And I was definitely educated, but I didn't go to school. I had a really weird upbringing where I was always introduced to art and stuff like that. I got a grandfather who's a watercolor painter, and he taught me at a young age. I was learning 3-point perspective when I was 12, and I think I painted my first mural in the fifth grade, and just getting introduced to it really early on. But growing up, it always been a struggle. And then by the time I was 18, I had dropped out of high school, and I was living on like Greyhound buses and doing construction, and that sucked so bad. And yes, it was rough. I did that for like a summer and was like, okay, I gotta take advantage of this craft I've been blessed with. And then like since the time I was 18, dude, I was printing out flyers around town, my hometown of the Quad Cities. I was I would do just about anything. It was a lot of graphic design early on. A lot of business cards, like no kidding. I did like I had local rappers who'd sit down in Photoshop, they'd be like, yo, add another stack of money. Okay, now add this car. Okay, now add more money.
It's yeah. like, and you're like, this is only 2.5 inches by 3 inches.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That was my favorite. And then making business cards for ladies that are like, you know, oh, turn this picture of like a, you know, this full blown JPEG of like a firework exploding into my logo. And you're like, well, that's not how logos work. But I was like 18 and I was hustling super hard. But I was also, it's like when people ask at Comic-Cons, I get asked a lot, like, you know, do you do this for a living? And it's like, well, what's your definition of living? If you can pay the rent, if you can get coffee, if you can have internet, and you do, like, that's living, you know? And that's early on, that's pretty much all it was just struggling real hard. I think the problem is I get a lot of graduates of art school or SCAD grads, and they're like, how did you prepare for the struggle? And I always feel like Bane in The Dark Knight, where it's like, you adopted the struggle. I was born into it, molded by it. Like, I've been eating ramen my whole life. Have you ever cashed beer cans for gas money? Like, welcome to the jungle, motherfucker.
Yeah, right.
But, and then I try to reel it back a little bit, and I tell them, it's like, you know, the struggle is, there's people who are taking a whack at this art thing, quote unquote, and then there's people who like need to eat,
right.
And those people are going to swallow you whole, and that's you know, and then they leave my booth scared, and, you know.
I don't want to do this anymore.
Oh, dude, yeah, well, yeah, it's like nothing but horror stories, man. But that's, you know, things that I find myself just telling them what I could have told my younger self.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, you know, that wasn't too bad. I just stayed hungry for a while. I was doing, kind of broke away from doing websites and graphic design. And I think my first like illustration gig, it was super weird. There's a company who, I don't know if you guys know OSHA.
Yeah.
Standards and safety, like posters. Oh, no, yeah, it's like this whole scene of like posters. And, there's this company and they hired me. I was like 20 years old or 21 years old. And they hired me to do a whole series of these posters. And that was awesome. Like that was a contract.
Was it for a specific company or was it for OSHA?
Well, I think the way it works is like OSHA mandates that by law you have to have signage.
Right.
And then, but so it's not like a proprietary thing. They don't actually sell the posters. Sure. Okay. So there's this whole industry of, like the company that hired me, I can say they were, they're called Mancom. They, their bread and butter was just taking, you know, stacks and stacks of very dry text and color coding it, applying it to certain professions. And they called me in and, I organized this little like zombie march, like a Halloween kind of festival thing.
Right.
So like around town, it's like, oh, we want to do, you know, it's hot right now, zombies. And this is just a bunch of people like at the board, you know, a bunch of like this stiff people at this boardroom. It's like, we gotta make some safety posters, let's do zombies, let's get that kid that does the zombie stuff. And because I guess with the OSHA posters, they need to be like really eye-catching. They were showing me, they're like, oh, this company, they got the Simpsons license and they're doing Simpson posters, and it's like Homer messing up at the nuclear plant. These things are so odd. Mm-hmm. Like,
wow,
these guys are killing us, we got to come up with something to, you know. So I did like, I think it was like a contract for like 12 posters, and it was like zombies, you know, it's like zombies can take the heat, but humans can't, don't smoke near an open flame. And then right, it's right. like, draw a zombie next to like smoking next to an oil barrel, and it blew up. And, you know, and that job was like, that was like my first good gig where I remember that's why I moved to Austin actually. When like that contract was set, it's like, well, I'm just going to, I got rid of everything I owned, which wasn't much, and went down to Austin, got a Craigslist roommate. That was in like 2012. Yikes. And it was wild, man. Yeah.
Well, that's like the beginning
right.
of this, like the super rich poster community that now is Austin, Texas.
Oh, absolutely, dude. Because within like the first month of being down there, I went to Mondo Gallery's first, their opening show, yeah. nice. Their first show. And I was, you know, I feel like I was familiar with like circa 11, 12 Mondo posters, but just as like that dope Robocop.jpg, right. you know, like, I'm like, you know, I kind of put the pieces together. It's like, oh, these are, you know, these are these guys, these are these talented dudes, and they're, you know, it's for these movies. And went to the gallery opening and I was just like, this is amazing. Like, I'm so motivated by like self-deprecating, like soul-crushingly good art. I was just like, oh my God, this is so cool. I want to do this.
Where did you go? So in that case, you said you moved to Austin, you moved for this, for the gig, for doing those posters. That's the first big job. So where do you go from there, I guess?
Oh, well, I didn't move to Austin for the gig. The gig paid well enough that I was like,
oh, that you could make the transition.
Yeah. I'm just going to be this, you know, traveling. What, you know, I had my laptop and my little Intuos, so the world was my oyster. And
so was there a plan of, well, I mean, I have to get a creative director or a graphic design position at a company. I need to work this many years, or was it kind of a, I want to do freelance. I just want to find cool gigs and, it'll just work out somehow.
More just seeing what I wanted, being inspired by seeing other people and wanting to do that. And then it's serendipitously kind of falling into place. I had no plan, man. Like I was like 22 years old trying to cash checks from NBC at like the local check cashing place in between Goodwill and the KFC. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I am no professional. Early on, there was no plan at all. I stumbled through these opportunities. So, but like after the Mondo show, I was like, oh, this is a dope poster. And of course, me and probably like hundreds of other artists emailed them like, hey, I draw too. Like, sure, I need dirt to dirt, only to be, you know, added to that pile and never responded to. But then, you know, I was just like, okay, well, I can emulate what I'm seeing here, and I can kind of challenge myself to, I can make a poster like this, I thought. And I just kind of picked something at random. I forget. It was, so at the time, The Last of Us. Yeah. I don't know if you guys are familiar with The Last of Us. Mm-hmm. The Last of Us had only really shared a game trailer that was all in-game footage from the engine, and that was about it. And then Neil Druckmann had a couple interviews where he had talked about how the clickers were cordyceps, or it was a zombie story with cordyceps. And I was like super stoked because I'm like, I'm into parasites and weird stuff.
Right.
And I was like, oh snap, well, I'll just do a poster of this, this Last of Us game or whatever this is, you know? And so just kind of like looking at my inspirations and like, Drew Struzan's stuff or, Arishi Arai, he's the Japanese poster artist that did all the Godzilla posters. And of course, everything that all the glorious 2012 Mondo posters that I had seen, I was like, oh man. And I got to work and I knocked this thing out just to kind of see if I could, you know, like I wasn't going to be one of those people that was just like, hey, hi, you know, I needed to prove to myself, I guess, first that I could do it. And I did. And when I was finished, it was pretty good. It's definitely like, I think a lot of artists are, you know, if success is a ladder, everyone's at a certain, I think like I had still, I could have done like the likenesses better. And I mean, there's things I could critique about it, but for overall, it was a decent poster. But it was actually the first piece of Last of Us fan art that there ever was.
Oh, that's awesome.
So when I posted it online, Neil Druckmann was like, oh, what's up, dog? Like, this is awesome. Like, what's this about? And I was like, I dig cordyceps. I dig whatever this game is. And he's like, right on. Well, let's get you in touch with the PlayStation dudes. And that led to me doing another poster for their PAX Prime set up in 2012.
Nice.
And then that just led to it. And then just, you know, other people seeing, I think after that I was like, okay, well, if I'm on the right track, let me try this again. And I did another poster, and it was my, my Akira poster. And then that one just led to, you know, a bunch of clients like, oh, hey, yo, dog, that thing, that Akira post you did, but like for our stuff.
Yeah.
Do that. Yeah. And then you do that. And then they're like,
well, that's
and then
only someone frame else of sees reference, it. Right? I mean, they have very little to like frame it against.
But the point is, you were producing, you were making the work. You weren't emailing people asking for a shot. You were just producing the work, and then you were getting noticed. So how has that progressed? I mean, that's, we're talking like 2012, 2013, fast forwarding now to 2018. What does that progression look like for you? I mean, is it, it, do you still feel like it's that level of, oh, well, we'll see what happens? Or is there a bit more reason to what happens when you're pursuing clients or making connections now?
Well, now, well, so that was surviving, and now I'm living, and I'm reaching this like level of comfort there. I'm just like freaked out, man. Like I actually, you know, possess things and have collections of things, and, you know, I can't like, you know, move in the middle of the night. I'm tied down by all this stuff and all these posters and, you know, board, shelves, board games and things like that. And, but I feel like I've been taking it a lot more seriously. And again, that's where my grandfather comes in, because he's been a professional watercolor painter for like 30, 40 years. And I think when PlayStation, when that PlayStation deal happened, you know, I hit him up and I was like, I'm going to need some help, man. And so I was like, you know, I was like 20, 21. And he was hooking me up with, you know, he's like, well, this is how like NDAs work. This is how you should write up a contract. And cause you know, he's a very talented watercolor painter, but he's also a really good businessman. And I think that really helps me a lot. And I don't think like SCAD grads, like I get people who've graduated asking me questions about that stuff. And it's like, how did you pay X amount for tuition? And like, no one taught you a standard, like usage or a contract or anything like that. So I'm like super, like, I gotta give props to my grandpa there. He really helped me out. And then, and from that point, like all my client, you know, so every client that contacted me, I was, I guess you could say like groomed to handle it in a professional manner. They didn't know I was, you know, some kid in the garage just jamming out, you know, drawing. I carried myself professionally and I delivered work, and it all kind of worked out. I really don't like the expression fake it till you make it, but, you know, it to an extent it kind of was, you know, until eventually, it was probably a few years ago, and it's like, well, I've got almost a year's worth of work like booked out, and I know what I want to do for like my personal poster projects, and I know what I'm gonna, like what I'm able to do for my clients. The bills are paid, like life's not crushing down on my like everything.
Yeah.
Oh snap, like this is working. Okay, all right, I'm gonna keep this.
So I want to hear about that, man, because it almost feels like there's a component of, let's just call it the golden years of 2012, right? Where you're surviving off of this, you're doing something you love, but there is also this struggle, and that age old saying, the starving artist. Now that you're not quite the starving artist, is there something missing from this, or are you finding fulfillment in doing your art in different ways?
I think like as an artist, I'm always kind of either evolving or trying new things. Like I'd hate to be the dude that's just, you know, climbs the top of that ladder and then he just stays there for 10 years. So like recently I've been really enjoying taking all of this art that I've made like over the last 6 years and doing comic conventions and not just like, not just, you know, setting up shop and slinging prints, but like, actually, like I said, like when these kids come to me and we talk like shop, or we talk, you know, about the artistic journey, or I share like I make digital like resources for for digital artists making screen prints and stuff. Like it's, I think for me, it's like sharing what I've learned is the new thing I'm really digging, is helping other people out. That's
more of that community aspect.
Well, then this is a great place for me to learn then, because Print Jockey, Slinging Prints, I was asking about this before we started, because that's not a phrase I'm familiar with. Andrew is, I said this again off air, Andrew is going to be the only one that's going to be able to keep up with you while you're talking. And so here's your chance to educate me a bit. What is a print jockey and why is that a bad phrase?
Well, if you've ever gone to a comic convention and you've seen like that one dude that's got the photo backdrop up to the ceiling, and then it's just the wall. Think of it like a store brand Mike Mitchell portrait series, where it's like, you know, it's just the wall of like, oh, I'm going to draw the Ninja Turtles, but just draw one Ninja Turtle and then color pick out the band and make it. Now I've got all four Ninja Turtles and just really quick, cheap, you know, portraits. And I don't want to say names, but just in general, like, someone who's created art that is the flavor of the month or whatever celebrity is passing through the petting zoo that is Comic-Con for people to buy the print to sell, you know, I'm in a weird position where, you know, being a freelance illustrator for 6 years, it's like, if you're an actor, if you're a musician or any sort of like artistic thing and your shit blows up, then you know, you're out in LA, you're doing this, you know, it's like you're on TV. When an artist gets successful, you're still behind your computer at home, drinking coffee, drawing. Like, it's, you know, it's very lonely. It's very secluded. And, so when I found comic conventions at a late age, I was like, this is awesome. And I went to, Anime Matsuri in Houston for the first time. And I was just so, like, excited to be around other people. And, but it's weird because mostly in the artist alley, you find people who are those types of artists who want to be freelance illustrators. Like, it's the opposite. They're like, oh, well, like, trade me places. You know, the grass is greener on the other side. And then the more I go to these, the more I see people who just artistically haven't grown, or, you know, this print's always been good enough, or, you know, Michael J. Fox is going to be here this weekend, so I made this in 48 hours, and here you go. And they're, if it sells, it's like this kind of like vanity metric for them in terms of success. And so,
yeah, it sounds like to me that it's very important for you to just be you. And when it came to the surviving aspect too, of you didn't need to ask 100 other people questions or this or that. You were going to figure it out. You were going to do the thing that was important to you, that you were passionate about, and you were going to make a way. Kind of sounds like a similar thing now, but just applying it to the things you choose to illustrate or how you're spending your time or that. The point is that you're being very intentional with all those pieces.
So on that topic of the Comic-Con people, not just the people who are coming and buying stuff, but the people who are out there trying to sell their wares, you mentioned that there's a component to it where you really want to help guide, maybe is the wrong word for it. Educate might be too lofty, but you want to help people in that community know maybe a better way, not the right way, but a better way to approach it. And what would you say that is?
The thing I get asked about a lot is like the printing. Cause I remember like I was the only person that showed up with screen prints. And I think a lot of these kids that are selling are just, they go to Kinko's and they make digital prints and they've never, you know, the white nuclear family that knows of the Marvel Cinematic Universe from Iron Man, and that's, they just, you know, they buy a print and it's like good enough, and they've never really thought to, you know, improve that. Like, they're like, well, why do you have big posters? Well, why do you make screen prints? It's like, what's your unit price? And it's like, well, that's irrelevant. Like, look at screen printing. You know, like, I've actually gotten a handful of artists into screen printing. My buddy Kevin Chin just did a really awesome Dragon Ball Z screen print. A handful of comic people are doing it now. And I actually, I bring like a 40-inch TV and I put it behind the booth. And it's this little video that I made of me at Valhalla. And Valhalla is printing I think it was my Berserk poster, and I've got like a flip book that shows like the process. And any kid who comes by and asks about it and lets me talk their ear off, like, I absolutely will. And even like digital printing too. Like, my last day job when I was young was at a print shop. So, like, I didn't know it, but I was getting this huge education and benefit as a digital artist, learning about like print media. And you know, so you got these kids who are printing on this like lightweight stock, and I'm trying to move them over to like offset or something. And because I don't, it's like there's this mentality of like, just get in, make your money and get out, and throw, you know, just like move these digital prints. And it's like, I'm like, yeah, but what if you turn these people, what if these people became patrons of the arts? Like, what if you could turn these people into collectors? Like, what if you could turn these kids into returning customers, invested in your art, invested in collecting prints? Like, wouldn't that be cool? And just trying to really, really like lift that craft up. And I'm, like I said, I make Photoshop tool sets for digital artists who want to get things screen printed. I don't have any stock in Valhalla in Kansas City, but I'm always pimping those guys out, referring people to them and any other screen printers. And, you know, I feel like a high tide raises all ships, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely. So that's what I'm gathering from your, I mean, that's what I'm gathering from your whole deal is you want to be part of that tide. You want to help people because that is how you got to be where you are. You want to be everybody else's grandfather, right? Not everybody had the opportunity to have a grandfather who poured into them that the way that you did in such a practical way that has helped you time and time again. So you get to be that. And I see that. I mean, I see that going like leaps and bounds in your whole deal.
Let me ask a quick question real quick. Going back to younger you, because you started very early, and thinking about maybe a habit that you cemented early that you've now carried through to today, is there a habit that you would say that you're glad you picked up when you were much younger?
Oh, man. Yeah, I think just like obsession. Like, I had a really bad problem with like Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers, Pokemon. Like, I would, you know, I wasn't like a well-balanced kid that was like in, like, I'd find like one thing and then it would be like a problem that the adults would need to talk to. Like, right. Like, oh dude, Alex got like balls deep into Animorphs, but like but like I'd carry like a box of all my books to like one, you know, to like a right. party, and like not right. you know, and it's like have like a creepy like like almost like stalker level scrapbook of Pokemon. Like, anytime Pokemon was in the news, and I'm just like glue sticking, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I made newsletters of like a little Pokemon like magazine in the fifth grade that I like stapled and gave to people. And but it's like, I remember my uncle was just like, "Oh, you can name all 150 Pokemon. Can you name all the states?" And I'm like, "Nope." Like,
just don't care.
Talk to you later, uncle.
Yeah, just stupid obsessed like into one thing, and it's like, it's kind of turned into like, I don't know, like that hyper focus, if you can steer it, is pretty beneficial. I think that's why, like, I'm always moving on. Like, you know, I was like doing I still am doing like poster illustration and like screen printing, but then, you know, I saw this Comic-Con stuff and I'm like, oh, what's this? Oh, this is cool. You know, we could improve this if we did this and switch that out and get like hyper obsessed with this. And then, you know, in 2 years I might be like, okay, all right, what's this? And then move on to the next thing. And, you know, as long as it's all productive, like as long as it elevates or has synergy with what I'm already doing or want to do, it's not a bad quirk to have.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so I'm gonna steer us into our final questions to be aware of your time and honor that, and then keep this bite size for everybody. So my question is this: you talked about you don't want to be one of those guys who reaches kind of like the upper echelon and just stays there for 10 years, right? So you're in this place now where you're comfortable, you're seeing at least a moderate amount of success for yourself. What's next for you? What are you doing to push yourself forward so you don't stay in that rut?
Oh man, I would love to create my own stories, my own worlds and characters. I would love to get into sequentials, going to comic conventions. You know, people who make art based off other people's IP. Like, we shouldn't fool ourselves that we're really kind of half the work's done for us, you know, and mm-hmm. people love these characters. I would love to go to a comic convention. I would love to have told my own story, have fans invested in those characters and those worlds. Like, that to me would be so freaking cool. I've got a lot of friends who are trying to push me in that direction. Yeah. I feel like I'm full of excuses these days, but I'm going to try and really, really buckle down on that and move in that direction sometime soon.
All right.
So for my final, I'm just curious, which turtle is your favorite and why?
Oh, you can't make me choose between. Like, was a fire absolutely. And it was Chibi and Jibby. Oh, man. Okay. So I got Chibi as a Valentine's Day present for my girl. And then we got Ghibli as a friend for Chibi because we didn't want Chibi to be alone. And Ghibli's actually kind of an aggressor, kind of a bully. Like, we had to look up online what to do because Chibi's so small. We thought maybe Chibi's not eaten. Maybe Chibi's – and then we watch, and sure enough, Chibi kind of bullies Chibi a little bit and eats all the food we put in there. So I have to, like, turn him upside down to display dominance in front of Chibi. And it's like a bunch of weird turtle stuff, man.
Wow. Turtle psychology.
Yeah, like, yeah, he's like upside down. Whisperer. I'm just like, yeah, that's right. Like, I'm the hand of God coming into your little Zen garden.
Screw you, turtle.
Yeah, let Jimmy have more arugula. So, I don't know, man. That's such a bad question. I mean, I'd probably pick up Chibi if there was a fire and then die going back for Chibi.
Well, Chibi's smaller.
Chibi would survive.
You have to go with the smaller first because Ghibli can like, just wait, make yeah. it by himself.
Yeah.
Patrick asks the questions that really make your heart.
And also the questions that nobody else would ever ask. Okay, so my final, like,
I would just make a movie. That would be like the climax of the film that I made about your life. I just want you to know that. It would be like posters.
It all comes down to
this. That's your first story. That's your first story. Like, that's the thing that happens in the beginning, and it's the story of how these two turtles, like, cope with losing their owner in the fire after being saved.
Or Jimmy would survive the fire and be deformed and ooh. Want revenge.
Yeah, like, yeah, or maybe he would mutate.
You are your own villain in the story. I love it. So like, you travel a lot, like, just going through your Instagram, you're at cons and different places all the time. So how do you find time for client work and personal work and traveling? Like, how does that work for you?
It doesn't work. It's actually become a problem. Like, I'm doing, I do like 20 weekends out of the year on the road. Like, I'm in Boston right now. Yeah. Like, I called you guys as soon as I got off the plane, got in my hotel, and like 3 days ago, I didn't know I was going to be here. Like, it was like it's just crazy. So, like, ideally, I'd like to kind of pull back on the conventions and focus more on creating new art. Because eventually it's gonna just drive me crazy. I don't think I can put together any work that I'm proud of. I draw on the road. I got an iPad and I've been playing around Procreate, but I really need to, I would like to employ some friends to go to conventions for me and then stay home and produce more. I think that would be awesome if we could start treating it more like, I don't know, like a traveling business model or something like that.
Sure.
But some of these, I don't know if, I don't know if I need to be the man in the trenches every weekend.
Right.
I mean, I don't sound like, it's like Obama before and after his term, man, like, because I've been doing cons for 3 years, and this is not what my voice sounded like 3 years ago. Right. This is not what I look like. Like, it is, like, comedians will say, like, oh, he's got the road on him. Yeah, like, he's been on the road too long, you know, when they go to do their sets. It's like, that's what I feel like. So...
All right. Well, tell everybody where they can find you. They can follow you. They can support you. They can buy things from you, and help push you forward.
Well, my Instagram, which is Instagram/thatkid who draws, is probably where I post a lot of my updates and like what I'm working on currently. And you can get to that. You can get to the thatkidwhodraws.com rabbit holes to all of the social media links.
All right,
and then. If they want to see me on the road, I'll be at I don't know when this is going to air, but I'll be at Anime Fest in Dallas. I'll be at Designer Con out in California, Rose City out in Portland, Tokyo Comic Con, New York City Comic Con, and a few others I'm sure I forgot.
God help me. You're doing that circuit, though.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
So I do have one final question. It's about a post that you posted like a month or so ago. You have an action figure of yourself now that you've been 3D printed. That thing insanely detailed.
Yeah, it's cool.
There's a little narcissism there, but what actually happened was I was at a convention that was dead. Oh, it was so bad. It was so slow. And there were these vendors, and it was this dude that licensed out this 3D printing company where you stand in this tent and you pose and it takes a picture. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And the con was so slow. I think his name was Glenn. I ended up talking to Glenn for like an hour and a half. And you could tell the dude wasn't making any money. He was just passionate about the future of this technology. And after an hour and a half, I was like, well, crap, I guess I got to let's do it. Okay. All right. You know, and I got in there with my road case, and that's where Glenn got me, because it counted as two people because the road case took up so much sandstone, which is what it's printed of. And, we got me and my road case. That's actually a custom ATUA road case. That's all my, posters are in flat and stuff that I take to cons. And so I got it printed. And,
but that's a really cool. I mean, even though Glenn kind of swindled you, but you still at least came out of that. Even though you may have spent more than you had intended to spend, came out with this insanely cool piece, and I want one. Not of you, of me. I mean, I'd take one of you. That's fine. That's a good looking beard. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us on the show, for chatting with us, for taking time. We know you're busy. You just got to Boston. You can find all the show notes and links to all the stuff that we just talked about at mofonepodcast.com. While you're there, you can find us on all the socials. You can go to our Discord channel and chat it up with people day in and day out who are insanely talented and super cool. What are other ways you can support us? You can like, subscribe, share on all the different platforms that we're on. And I think that's really it, right? I
mean, hey, big news, though. So two things. A, tomorrow, I'll just use A, even though I said two things. tomorrow is Pop-Up Crop. Big thanks to Trainer Gray. That's where we'll be. And so if you're going to be there, just come find us in Portland. Find us, talk to us, all that kind of stuff. Thing number two, next Tuesday's episode is a very important episode. And you're going to want to make sure that you hear it.
Episode 325, big, big news.
Big news on 325. But if you're in Portland, come find us. You have one more day to find us.
Well, and this is airing Thursday morning, so tonight is going to be, or today, we're going to be doing some game stuff, and then there's the pre-parties and all that stuff. So
that's right. So just if you're anywhere near the area, check our socials, hit us up, find us. Let's hang out and do fun things together.
Absolutely. I think, but for now, we're going to get out of this episode, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Patrick.
I'm Luke.
I'm Alex.
Peace out.
Bye.
Hold on to your butt.
Sayonara.